Welcome back to Following Noah Donna Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 204, and we're in chapters 17 through 21 of the Bands of Mourning. Elliot, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm ready to explore more of Scadrial and learn even more about relativistic physics, maybe.
Maybe. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing great. I think, Elliot, I think we will be talking about physics, but maybe in a different light this episode. Maybe the physics of tomatoes and broken bones or something. We'll talk a bit about that.
Oh, yes. Operation Spoiled Tomato. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe we have anything else to discuss. Let's roll intro and then get a chapter summary from Elliot. Alrighty, Elliot, what happens in 17 through 21?
All right, so the crew heads out to the little town of Dulsing. They are riding along in a stagecoach to try and get there, but they're trying to like dodge people along the way. So I kind of imagine them like just driving over brush and scrub as through the middle of the wasteland to try and get to this city without being noticed. They do get there and find a like guarded fort that's been built in the middle of this town. And they decide, well, we got to figure out what they're doing here. So let's sneak into the guarded fort. They do so and find all the bad guys working on a giant ship with weird powered devices and new languages and prisoners who are not like people we've seen before, who speak other languages and wear crazy masks. And we start to put pieces together. Maybe this ship crashed here and the Set has jumped on it and taken control of it. They're trying to figure out what it is, what it does. In the midst of all this, Wax finds Telson, his sister, and giant shootout ensues, and they're able to escape with Telson and the spike. As they're going through things, they find a safe, they rifle through it, and come out with a number of interesting things, but one of which is Relure was the guy?
Relure, yeah.
That guy. His spike, which those were our two quest objectives, I think, was come home with those two. So we've got those two. They escape in like an escape pod, like a little mini ship that they are able to launch off of the mothership. And they're flying through the air, powered by Wax's Allomancy and some other fancy ferrochemi physics that I do want to talk about. And they are head off kind of at the end of chapter 21 to go to the other location where the Set has, where we think the Bands of Mourning might just be.
There's a lot there. Elliot, do you remember last book, maybe, where Harmony mentions to Wax that the people of the basin are not progressing as they should, unlike some other people, and then you threw out randomly, so there's probably Koloss in biplanes out in the rough somewhere that we don't know. Do you remember this?
I do remember this.
Given the context of this episode, all you needed was just to go one step further and some other people group who we've never met in biplanes out there somewhere. And
apparently,
here we are. So I would say that's a success for you, Elliot.
I close enough, I guess. I was pairing that with kind of the question of where's all the Koloss, because we've gotten references to like Koloss blooded people, but I think still some references to like full up Koloss, and we haven't seen any. So it's like, where's the Koloss? Well, Harmony tells us there's other people progressing further. The Koloss must be in biplanes. There are planes, just not with Koloss in them. A whole new people group, something completely different. I'm very intrigued by this new guy.
Yeah. We'll get to him. Before we get to the encampment, though, Marisee accidentally figures out what the little cube does that we found two episodes back. They are moving in a carriage, traveling at some speed, and she warps time around herself, and the horses go crashing through the edge of her speed bubble and almost like tear themselves apart in space-time. Oops. And Wax has some like offhand comment about how this doesn't usually happen if you're on something big enough. Did you guys catch that?
I did, and I was bothered a little bit by the explanation.
Yeah, me too.
Because what he said is, if you're on like you just said, if you're on something big enough, the bubble moves with you.
Right.
And he even mentions like the rotation of the Earth.
Right.
The Earth is spinning, so you're moving in space. So yeah, good point. How does the bubble move with you? Well, apparently because it's attached itself to the Earth. Marcy goes, well, I did it on the train and it was fine. So apparently a train is big enough, but a carriage is not. So she pops this bubble, but the bubble doesn't move with them. It like stays and they move forward and crash into the front of it.
So what I think the Cosmere explanation for this is it has everything to do with your perception of yourself.
There you go.
If you perceive yourself as moving, then your bubble is going to stay behind you. If you perceive yourself as stationary, then it's going to move with you.
That's a good thought. I like that a lot because that ties into a lot of our other magic systems, which have mattered based on how you perceive things. So that would be a consistency that I like your explanation way better than Wax's.
But the train still bothers me because if I'm on a train, I am actively thinking about the train. I'm not actively thinking about the rotation of the planet. So I accept the perception for the planet one. I don't accept the perception for the train one. I think the train one, you're definitely going to leave your bubble behind you.
I could see it. Depends on whether you're looking out the window or not. If you're not looking out the window on a train and you're focused on like the card game on the table in front of you, it's totally feasible to forget that you're on a moving object.
Yeah, I guess.
Think about in our world, like flying on an airplane. Unless you're looking out the window, watching the clouds go by, it almost feels sometimes when you're in an airplane that you're just stationary next to everything else around you, and then magically you just land at the other airport.
I guess. So, perception of your speed bubble. She pops it in the carriage, tears everything apart. So they stop and start doing some experiments with this cube. What do they find out?
Allomancy grenade.
Yeah. And Paul, who do you think has the best potential for this allomancy grenade between Wax, Wayne, and Marisee?
I certainly want it to be... I keep wanting more big, you know, big brain uses for Marisee's allomancy. So that's what I want to say, but... I feel like this will probably be the most fruitful, I would imagine, with Wayne's.
What does Wayne burn?
Bend alloy, right?
No, that's not his healing. That's his
speed bubble.
So his speed bubble. So he could burn a speed bubble and then throw it at somebody else and speed them up.
Which he does. We get to see all of them use their powers, don't we? I think Wayne does this. He saves Wax in like a key moment by doing this. Wax is about to get shot. Wayne does what you just described, throws a speed bubble to him so that he can then, you know, dodge out of the way of the bullets.
But out of our four or five heroes, they come to the same conclusion, Paul, that you're hoping for, is that actually Marisee may have the best use for this, because then she could charge a slow bubble and throw it at enemies and render them useless. So
yes, yeah.
That feels like one of those cheat codes for the final boss.
Yeah.
Like if you could just slow bubble the final boss and just beat him right there, done.
You got to go. So no. This is an MMO where there's three bosses. You've got two tanks. You got to go kite that one while you take out this one, and then you handle that one. That's what this is.
Mez the other one with your slow bubble. Yep.
There you go.
This whole concept is really cool. I enjoyed learning about how the leecher worked, right? Because I think this is at the time where Wax remembers back to being on the train and having all of his metal drained or his power drained, and he was confused on how that could happen. And here we learn that it was with a leecher using this. And that was really cool. It's one of those moments where we're just opening up more and more possibilities for our elementic powers, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
I really enjoyed this for that exact reason. We talked about, before we'd even read the first word of Era 2, what we were excited about. And I think we were excited about all the crazy ways technology and magic would come together. Yeah. And all the... we've got three magic systems that all do some pretty crazy things already when you start mixing them with Allomancy, Ferrochemy, and Hemalurgy. When you add technology into the mix, now you can just go to whole new crazy worlds. And we talked about bending bullets around corners. And I'm still waiting for one. The idea that popped into my head when I started thinking about this was healing bullets using Hemalurgy.
Mm-hmm.
If you could Hemalurge your friend with some healing because you shoot them with a spike that allows them to heal. I'm waiting for that moment. Hasn't happened yet.
That's pretty cool. I haven't thought of that, but that's pretty cool.
Wax did do the whole shoot the spike into somebody with the whole Lessie thing
right
at the end of last book. So
they did do that, but what you're saying of some kind of healing thing, you know. I don't know if you could shoot someone with pewter or something and make them bulk up. Mm-hmm. Or I could totally see that scene happening where Wayne shoots Wax or something and it's what do you mean, I was helping you or something, you know. Right. Totally see that scene in my head.
If Wayne gets all of his metals drained from something and then Wax shoots him with a gold bullet, he could absolutely use it.
So that kind of craziness, and this Allomancy grenade thing is going in those kind of directions. There's now all sorts of other things we can start to do if you can chuck your powers elsewhere.
So I feel like near the end of our chapters, this box, this grenade is mentioned kind of in tandem with or alongside the Bands of Mourning, or is this the Bands of Mourning and such? I don't know if y'all thought much about that, or maybe I got that mixed up, but
they did mention it. Wayne takes the proof of the gold metal mine that they find off Killasina. Wayne can tap it. Wayne can use the gold metal mine, which is a big deal. So Wayne then takes that as proof that the Bands of Mourning exist. That if I can have a metal mine that somebody else stored and I can use it, that means the Bands of Mourning must exist. And Wax says, not quite, but we're definitely on that track, because the Bands of Mourning claim that anyone could use whatever power is in it. Doesn't matter if you're a ferrochemist or not. So we're still one step shy of the Bands of Mourning, but... having your metal mine being able to be sold is definitely now on the table.
I think we get told in chapter 21, when that mask guy starts to spill lots of information, that supposedly the Bands of Mourning, not only can anyone use them, but it grants the powers of all 16 ferrochemy abilities and all 16 Allomancy abilities.
You get everything. According to him. Yes. Like, according to his like religion, which they like worship the Bands of Mourning as like a sacred artifact. So that may not be true, but that is what he believes.
Good clarification there, yes. But he also is very correct about some of the other things that he's telling them about with these ferrochemi like medallions that they're doing. So I'm not quite ready to dismiss that as superstition just yet.
I don't know if this is me jumping too far ahead. So if we need to talk about other stuff, we can. But on the aspect of, I guess, technology or mm-hmm. investiture here, in chapter 20, I think it is. Is it okay if I talk about our masked man a little bit and some of the stuff please. He does? So what stuck out to me the most, and I think I made a brief mention of this in the like live reactions in our Discord. He can't really communicate with anybody, but then he puts a sticker or something on Marcy, who can now understand him. It's kind of in a thick accent and stuff, but she can understand him. And my instant thought is, was that a soul stamp? Because this is soul stamp that allowed them to communicate in some capacity. I don't know what else it could be. So,
does he put it on Marcy or does he put it on himself?
I could be wrong. I'm pretty sure he put it on Marcy, though.
I don't remember. He does put it on Marcy at one point, but I don't remember if that's this chapter or next episode.
I think we might be confusing two different things. A couple things happen. When they get into the ship that they fly away in, I think they all end up wearing, it's either a wristband or a medallion of some kind. And I think the mask guy puts that on all of them. I think that might be what you're thinking of, Paul. It's explained, or it's either explained or Wax guesses that those medallions are lightening everyone's mass.
They're skimmer medallions, yep.
Yes. They are doing what Wax does with his ferrochemy and lightening everybody so that the thing can fly just based off of like Wax's push of Alamancy. Otherwise, he'd be lifting like six people into the air, which would be super heavy. But I think we're being told this is like an ultra lightweight craft, and they're all reducing their mass really low so that they can fly through the air. Then the dude puts another medallion or wristband thing, I think, onto himself, and that's when he starts speaking the language they can understand, I think. I think that one was on himself. But I'd have to go back and double check.
He does put it on Marcy, but I think that's next. I think that's like a chapter later. I don't think we've read that yet. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong. He could have put it on her already. I don't remember.
I want to go back and read it now, because I'm second guessing myself. I'll tell you what I think. I think the answer to your question, Paul, is that these are all metal mines. That all of these things that happen in this quick sequence of events is this new idea that anyone can use these metal mines. These are all things that have been prepped for these purposes so that anyone can use them. They've had the identity pulled out of them, or whatever it was that we got explained before. It's this combination of identity metal mind and whatever power you want, like the language speaking or the mass lightning. I think it's like a whole new, heat. There's a whole new class of metal mines we've just bumped into, because now if you combine it with the identity stuff, you can get one that you can pass around and everyone can use. That's my guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
But your soul stamp crossover would be way cooler.
That's right. I think the only thing I'm thinking of is maybe I'm wrong. I don't remember anything being related to like potentially like language or understanding or something. There could be something with like a ferrochemical power, because I know Sazed has all in Era One had all the stuff with like all these languages and like cultures and religions and things like that. So I could see that. I just don't have a specific thing off the top of my head that I remember.
I'm pretty sure after my last reread that this question is explained to you like in the first half of chapter 22. Like
that sounds about right.
Within a couple pages, we'll get the answer for your question. Did you guys recognize anything about the mask or his name maybe or anything like that?
See, it's moments like these. Ask questions like that,
have you seen anything like this before?
That make me
stomach Chris,
drops. keep going. It's gonna be here a while.
These are the moments where I realize I've missed something. What have I missed? Because the answer to your question is no. I don't think I noticed anything about this person.
So let me bring your brains back about 3 years to Words of Radiance.
Oh my goodness.
Words of Radiance, where Shallan is getting in good with the Ghostbloods. She's trying to impress Marais and who?
The assassin lady with the mask.
Do you remember her name?
I did not remember an assassin lady with a mask. It's been a minute.
Well, on your Words of Radiance reread, keep a lookout. Her name is Yatil.
Yeah. And there's a scene too where like, or we learn at one point that like, actually Marais is not in charge. She's the one that's in charge. And she ends up going on like this little sneak into the place with Shallan. Actually, they end up like bumping into Talon, or Shallan's able to like shake her at one point, I think. And Shallan gets to go talk to Talon. Yeah. It's coming back.
Yep.
Hmm.
The assassin lady with the mask in the Ghostbloods. That's all I'll say for now.
And Ghostbloods, Scadrill. Okay.
There you go. Ghostbloods equals Scadrill. We haven't really found out how or why Ghostbloods equals Scadrill yet.
Kelsier somehow.
But we're about to.
Yes.
All right, anything else on Alec? We'll come back to him at the end of the episode, I think. But anything else on Alec for now?
All right. Super quick, because I think it's relevant now to what we're talking about. He's a different people group.
Yes.
Than we've encountered before. You talked about Harmony's comments from before, which could easily be a reference to these guys. But when he starts talking to them about stuff, you realize that he's talking about Era One.
Yes.
He has this whole thing where he's like, you froze the world. And they're all like, what are you talking about? It's perfectly normal. And he's like, no, it's freezing out here. And like, you pick up more and more as you go that apparently he comes from a place where they like it scaldingly hot. And this normal temperature they think is freezing. And there's even references to like that. I forget who puts this together. Maybe Marcy. Marcy's pretty smart. That like, he must have lived outside of where the ash mounts were, because the ash mounts were like the Lord Ruler created those to like keep it a little bit cool because he put the planet in the wrong place. So this dude lived outside of that where it was scaldingly hot because the Lord Ruler put the planet too close to the sun place. That's where this dude is from and his people? Crazy.
It's not a deity, but he offers up a term of a religious figure in his like religion. Do you remember the term, the title that he gives this religious figure?
Well, our people equate whatever he says to the Lord Ruler, right?
Yes. So, a little bit of recap for you. He says, you guys froze the world, which would be Harmony putting the world back in place. Right. And now he lives in Antarctica. unfortunately. He lives in the southern hemisphere, right? So he didn't need the ash mounds because he lives on the southern hemisphere. So when the planet was burning up, he was fine. Now the planet's back where it's supposed to be. Now he lives in there in Antarctica. He says shortly after that, the Sovereign came and gave us some powers and helped us through some dark times. And the Bands of Mourning are his, or something like that. And so our heroes jump to the conclusion of the Lord Ruler? I mean, the Lord Ruler died. Vin killed him. And so then Maris, he says, well, history's been wrong before, but what do you guys know about the Lord Ruler via secret history? What happened to the Lord Ruler when he came through?
We were with Kelsier when Kelsier saw him like die and do this like passing through thing that right. Vin and Elland also do. And as far as we know, they're very dead. So like
they are very dead.
As far as we know via secret history, like you just said, we've seen the Lord Ruler pass on into the beyond or whatever the death is. So right. Yeah, I'm following that logic to say, hang on a second, that story doesn't check out. Or like you clarified, our character's interpretation of this dude's story doesn't quite check out.
There's a disconnect somewhere because they immediately assume it's the Lord Ruler. He doesn't disagree with them. He's like, sure, whatever, whoever owned the Bands of Mourning. And they're like, yeah, that's the Lord Ruler. So he apparently went to the Southern Hemisphere and helped out some people that were freezing to death.
So that's not what happened. Now the question is, who picked up the Bands of Mourning and went to Antarctica?
Yeah. That's not a sentence I thought I'd hear today. Who picked up the Bands of Mourning and went to Antarctica, Paul?
Was it Spook?
Could be.
Spook is who I thought of too, but Spook has his own legend associated. We've gotten a lot of references to him. He's the Lord Mistborn, right?
Yes, the Lord Mistborn. He was around for like 100 years,
right?
Until he finally, we assume, died.
So if it's Spook, it seems like he had to have hung around for the founding of Elendil and all that, and then went off to this place, perhaps, but I can't think of who else it might be.
Dimmu. Sorry, just had to put that name out there. I mean, we talked about last episode that our world hoppers seemingly don't die, so just need to put him out there as a candidate, because you know Dimmu's the best character out of Scadrial.
Two other quick facts associated with this dude before we talk about other stuff. He apparently is supposed to think, it seems part of his religion perhaps, that Allomancers are like highborn or noble blood or almost like deities.
Yeah.
Almost. He almost doesn't want to respect Wax, but has to. And is throwing all these honorifics at him because he has to, kind of thing. So we can factor that into what we learn about this dude's culture. Two, he's deathly afraid of some people called the Deniers. And our heroes hear that and they're like, oh yeah, the Set, they're pretty dangerous. And the dude's like, oh no, 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 no. The Deniers, and like shudders and won't talk about it. He's like, whoa, hang on a second. Is that another people group that we don't know about? Or are those just the Koloss and Biplanes?
So there's been a 300-year dogfight between these guys and the Koloss and Biplanes over Antarctica. Today we learned. Yep. All right, let's bring it a little bit back down to Earth. We found Telson. Do you guys remember which way you guys predicted? I had you guys predict whether Telson would be in need of rescue or not in need of rescue. Do you guys remember which way you predicted?
No, I do not.
I want to say I said no, that it was going to be a she's on the other side or something like that.
I believe that's correct. I believe Elliot predicted she's a set plant, and Paul predicted that she genuinely is trapped by Edward. So we have Telson. She hasn't really done that much yet. We'll see what happens. But I just wanted to call back that prediction, see which way it goes.
And I'd like to point out, we have not resolved that yet. She appears to be in need of rescue.
Right.
She appears rather pissed off.
Yeah.
That was my take on Telson. She seems upset.
She not like shot the guard in the face as soon as she got a gun.
Like four times.
Yeah.
She doesn't seem scared or crushed or like prisoner-esque. She just seems angry. Which maybe it's this whole she wasn't tortured. She was just kind of held, you know, against her will. She had nice dinners with Edwarn whenever he was around, and she's just frustrated. But something seems a little off with her. She's more angry than she seems like she should be.
She also mentioned that Edwarn was holding her for her or for Edwarn's other plan, which you can insinuate of capturing young metalborn ladies to make them have kids. But she's too old for that now, so he's holding her for just ransom against Wax, basically. So that's what she says, is that the only reason why he kept her is for a bargaining chip against Wax. So what else?
Paul, I think you wanted to talk about Wax chucking Wayne over fences.
Yes,
I did. I thought this scene was really, really funny when they're figuring out what to do. They're running through all these names of, I guess, you know, it's almost like a playbook. Names of just ridiculous stuff. I don't remember all of them except for the one they landed on, which was Rotten Tomato, which is where I was not expecting this. I was not expecting Wax to just shoot Wayne up over, you know, super high up, crazy high speeds, to just shoot him into this over into enemy territory to just splat like he was the Rotten Tomato. I was not expecting that. I thought that was very amusing and funny. And it was really funny seeing Wayne's point of view. I also have to add, so Wayne, you know, he's shot over. We get his point of view, and he's like, wow, you know, it's okay, because if you break your spine, you know, you don't really feel the pain, so it's all okay. The worst part is whenever your spine heals, when you heal your spine, so you feel the pain, but he's used to it at this point. So overall, it's not that big of a deal, which I thought was pretty ridiculous. And then he's trying to think of his, I guess, best course of action next. Naturally, Wayne says, I need to go get a guard's hat. How am I going to impersonate a guard without his hat? Without a guard's hat. And, you know, I made a little note in our outline, because this has been such a like recurring theme, I feel like, of such a recurring joke, I should say, of Wayne trading hats, needing the hat of X or Y person so that he can impersonate them well. And I'm like, do y'all think there's something more to the hats that he has? Does he somehow actually gain a almost like a light weaving-esque feature to like impersonating someone if he has the proper hat that they wear?
Back to your soul stamp comment.
Mm-hmm. Is that his soul stamp equivalent? Is he using the hat as somehow a similar way?
Or I'm thinking back to our discussion on perception of what you perceive yourself to be, you are.
That's fair.
does Wayne, is there some of that going on of when Wayne puts a hat on, he sees himself as that and it feeds into his ability to impersonate somehow?
That one certainly makes sense to me.
Do you guys remember, it's kind of threaded throughout Stormlight, perception as like a healing tool with Knights Radiant, where Lopin is able to heal his arm because he doesn't view himself as like crippled or anything like that. But Rissen, right. She cannot heal her crippledness out of her flying Stormlight wheelchair because she doesn't view herself that way. Or Kaladin not being able to heal the scars on his forehead until he said the fourth ideal, to where he lets go of Tien's death. He is still a slave in his own head until he lets go of that. So yes, perception is an interesting tool in some Sanderson magic systems, which I think is kind of cool.
That's a great point.
But it kind of implies something here that there's some element of magic going on in what Wayne does there. Is it not just his ability to speak in crazy accents? Like, has he got some magical powers going on there too?
That's what I've been thinking. I do think you're on with the perception. It's like I said initially, it's like a joke. It's been a running joke for Wayne. I was like, yeah, I took his hat. He had a nice hat, and just kind of running with that. But there comes a point of repetition of the same joke that I'm like, there's got to be something else here. I could fully believe that it's just a bit of perception, whether Wayne realizes it or not. We've definitely gotten nods that Wayne knows a lot. He kind of acts dumb. Like, he knows way more and he's way smarter than he seems. He just acts very like an airhead, you know, like just saying whatever, doing whatever, you know, we'll just happen ourselves through whatever problem is at hand. So I'm starting to think that there's definitely an air of legitimacy. So something going on here, like for real, whether that's just perception or something bigger.
I mean, you do have to be genuinely smart to impersonate genuinely smart people, so.
Yeah. Hey, he's very impressive with his accents and everything, so. Yeah.
I got to jump on that, though, to point out something that I'm a little bit offended by. Wayne, at one point here, impersonates an engineer. And he does so by firing off a series of nonsense words that have nothing to do with each other. And I felt attacked as an engineer. Is that what I sound like when I go on my engineering rambles? You guys are just like, oh, here he goes again.
No, Elliot, I hate to break it to you, but you sound more like Wax in this scene, complaining about his aching joints and not being able to get up the ladder and being winded by the third flight. That's you.
It is. Oh, it is. So badly. I was, while we're on it, actually a little bit miffed at Mr. Sanderson. Earlier in one of these scenes, it's like from the very beginning when Wax... I think it's Wax. Maybe it's Marcy and Milan. They're sneaking through and they see this group of like engineers or scientists that are getting a tour of the ship. Do you guys remember this?
Yeah.
In one sentence, the narrator, which I'm interpreting to be Brandon, refers to the group as engineers. And then like three sentences later, refers to the same group again as scientists.
Oh, that's a faux pas.
Again, I'm a little offended here because engineers are not scientists.
I've been corrected for that on this podcast before.
That I have been associated as such and been implied there that those are synonyms. Very different, Mr. Brandon. Very different.
I think in Maris, well, Marisy's smart. Why would she make that mistake? Because it's from the point of view of Marisy.
I think it is.
Or maybe if it's from the point of view of Wayne, I could understand it. Because Wayne would make that mistake. Marisy would not. Marisy's a scholar. What else? To answer your question, Paul, I don't think Wayne is gaining any significant magical powers through hats. I think he's just an idiot and likes hats.
Now, that is also a very valid thing. You know, that's very valid. But I think my ultimate guess is that it may actually be related in some way to perception, but not even all the time. I think some of it is just Wayne being an idiot, right? I feel like this is legit and having an effect on him, you know?
I do give merit to your claim that a recurring joke can only be so recurring before it's actually a genuine thing. So I do understand that. We get this crazy scene where Marisy gets shot like in the stomach, and then Milan like melts her hand, shoves it into Marisy's abdomen, heals her torso, and gross. Then pulls it back out.
Gross.
Awesome.
No, gross.
What beta reader? I want to know this. What beta reader was like, okay, so this would have happened like a couple books ago. Maybe in the previous book. Feasibly, a chondra could eat somebody and then reproduce their organ and give it back to them as a transplant. And Brandon was like, yes, that is brilliant. I'm going to put that in. And he puts it in. That's awesome and really gross. But it's mostly awesome. I thought that was really cool.
It even goes so far as to describe how she sucks out like the septic intestine goop so that it doesn't infect her, and then like spits it out over the side of the plane. Is like,
yeah.
Whoa.
And then go ahead, Paul.
Oh, I was going to say this definitely was a like not for the faint of heart scene. It was, and I also thought it was very funny that Milan kind of implies she's not going to make it.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly how the cadence of this went, but she basically tells Marisy she is going to die, but oh no, not today. You're not going to die today. That's ridiculous, but
right.
You know, you of course will die someday, you know.
All right. Elliot, you mentioned this a little bit earlier. At the beginning of the book, we had three quests, or one main quest with two side quests, right? One main quest was retrieve Relure's spike. That was what the Chondra told us to do. What ended up getting Wax to go on the mission was he saw a picture of Telson. And then bonus is like, oh, and the Bands of Mourning. Bands of Mourning are in there too. Oh, and stopping suit. So maybe there's four. We just completed two of them, right? We just completed find Telson and find the spike. So they consider going back to Ellendale. Should we go home? We've got Telson, we've got the spike. But what makes them turn south towards the mountains? What's that thing gnawing in Wax's the back of Wax's head that makes him stay down here?
Isn't it the fact of the Bands of Mourning? It's the we don't want suit to get the Bands of Mourning, essentially. Correct. We don't want that power to fall into the wrong hands.
Telson says Ed Warren is on his way to the Bands of Mourning. And Wax says that's really important. If they're real, we can't let him have it. We need to go and defend them. So that's what they do. They decide, hey, if Ed Warren has to hike through the mountains, we might be able to just fly there faster and find him faster since we know maybe where it is. I think Alec has a spot on his map that where the temple is. So prediction time, gentlemen. Are the Bands of Mourning real? Well, let me back up. We know the metal minds of the Lord Ruler are real. Is that what is waiting for us? And who gets them? Leading into book four.
You ready for this?
I want a specific character, not a team. What character gets them if
oh, somebody gets I got them? You.
Okay.
The object at the temple they are going to get is the Bands of Mourning. I think it is the Metal Minds of the Lord Ruler. I think it even is that.
Okay.
It may not do exactly what they think it's going to do. That might be the twist, is that it's got either a different power than they're expecting or not what they're expecting somehow. Here's my crazy prediction. Telson snatches them for herself, taking on all the power held within, and is the villain for book four.
Okay. Paul?
Wow, that was a big prediction. I like what you're thinking. I do think, okay, so, you know, if you're asking me who I think, like, okay. First, I'm going to make my prediction. I do think the Bands of Mourning are real, legit. Like, I think we're going to find them. But there's a couple caveats here. If one of our characters were to get them, I would say Wax. I'm trying to think of someone else, but it should and would be Wax who would get them. However, I don't think that's plausible. I don't think that's how the story's going to go. There doesn't seem to be a villain strong enough to be able to deal to put up a fight versus Wax with these Bands of Mourning as we know them to be right now. So I like what Elliot's saying. I don't think Telson is going to be the villain. I think it is going to make its way, get maybe stolen, whatever. There's going to be a betrayal or something. And I think it is going to go back to Set, to our current villain that we're after. Edward. I think that's how we're going to end the book, maybe here, maybe in the book, or maybe not. Is, you know, we finally get that moment where Wax is faced up with Set, but it's not going to end in one of them dying. It's going to end in maybe an escape with the Bands of Mourning or something like that. So, and I think Elliot's spot on. I think that is going to end up being the kind of book four antagonist.
Maybe the okay. Bands of Mourning are made of the lost metal.
Ooh, there you go. Or I think that we're going to rediscover the lost metal in the last book, and that's how they're going to bring down the Set. I think so.
All right. Anything else before we go to a Stormlight review?
While we're talking about villains, there was a name drop kind of snuck in there. We actually had a very random POV in the head of Eirik?
Yeah, Eirik.
Eirik? The limping guy? Who?
Hold on. Do you want to spell check that one, Paul? You want to stab at Eirik?
Eirik. I mean, I can give it a go. I'm blanking on who this was.
This is the Kane guy, who the lurcher who throws the cube. What's Eirik?
Eirik. I mean, I would, based off of the way Elliot was saying, I would assume it's just Eirich.
Oh. Impressive.
What? How do you assume that?
Yeah, he was trying to say like Eirik or Eirich.
Like, yeah. I guess he did put in a CH after.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Maybe I'll give it to
you. So my other guess, like if I didn't hear it pronounced that way, I would have guessed it's either that or with a Q or something at the end. So,
well, that guy, we spent a little bit of time in his head, which was a little strange. I wasn't sure why we did that. But he has a thought. He thinks to himself about how he's interested in all this for the science because he needs a medical miracle. He's dying fast or something and needs to heal himself. But he says, he thinks in his mind, Suit and Sequence wanted their weapons and they could have them, for Eirik desired only one thing, a miracle. Paul, for your benefit, Sequence is capitalized alongside Suit. And up until now, I'd been thinking of Suit as a name for Uncle Edwarn related to like the clothing item, a suit.
Yes.
But then when it got paired next to Sequence, and I thought about that next to Set, now I started thinking about this in terms of like playing cards.
Where's my card set?
And
that's funny.
And I hadn't thought about that before. Suit in the context of playing cards, and Set and Sequence, which is another kind of playing card term, but Sequence as in like a name, as in Set and Sequence, as in there's two head bad guys. Who is Sequence?
Little did you guys know, we're playing poker the whole time.
Apparently.
Let's go. No, okay. As you say that, my thought, whenever you said Suit and Sequence is capitalized, I'm like, okay, this isn't an investiture term, you know. This is someone, like a proper noun, like someone named Sequence.
Yep. Right.
But yeah, I didn't put that together. That's pretty cool.
Anything else?
That's all I got, I think.
Alrighty. We will reconvene next week. Let's do a quick Stormlight review before we close the episode. Paul, you're going to lead this. It is 11 after last week to 6. Paul, you're going to lead this. Here is a Stormlight chapter title. What happened in the chapter? Chaperone.
Chaperone. The only guess I can come up with is this. The chapter, one of the early chapters that involves Radiant, Shallan and Radiant. Whenever, isn't there a moment where, you know, her in her relationship with Adolin, it's kind of like awkward, I guess. I don't know, like romantically or something for them. And so she, part of Radiant coming out is Radiant almost serves as like a chaperone. That's what I'm thinking of. Like Radiant is the confident one. And so that is the only guess I can tie to chaperone. So that's what I'm going with.
I'm going to give it to you, even though your nouns are a little bit incorrect. Okay. So it is an early Oathbringer chapter where Shallan and Adolin are beginning to like re-court, because Adolin kind of like freaks out that she's a Radiant, pulls back, and Shallan's like, no, I like you. We're still dating, by the way. Chaperone refers to pattern.
No mating.
No
mating. That's right. That's right.
So I am going to give this to you because you were there. You were within, yeah, within the shot. Radiant is not actually on the scene yet for another couple, yes, chapters, because it is awkward. It, Radiant, you're right. And like Shallan is
pattern, like, of the same role in my mind in this scene, yeah, or that's what I'm mixing up in this scene.
Right. Yeah. Shallan is like fumbling this relationship, and she's like, I need to be better at this. And then comes up with Radiant.
Wow. I think that's the first time I've gotten a chapter one. I think.
There you go.
Could be wrong. I think that's the first time.
Alrighty. Elliot, here's your quote ID. Who is talking? Give the sword to Dalinar. Dalinar is taken to Odium's visions sometimes. It should travel with him. Do you understand? Odium thinks the sword is in Urethiru. He doesn't realize you're here. He can't see it because of Renarin.
Well, it's not Dalinar. He doesn't usually refer to himself in the third person, I don't
think.
The
royal we. Give the sword to Dalinar.
I remember this discussion, but I don't remember who exactly is having it. This is like, it's like late Rhythm of War stuff. Oh, it's getting late. I'm blanking on this. I think this is... No, so that doesn't make sense. Who knows that much information that's talking about that? It's not Yasna, but that's the only name I'm coming up with. So I think... Yeah. Yasna.
Incorrect. Paul?
Can you read it for me one more time?
Give the sword to Dalinar. Dalinar is taken to Odium's visions sometimes. It should travel with him. Do you understand? Odium thinks the sword is in Urethiru. He doesn't realize you're here. He can't see it because of Renarin.
See, I also thought this was Yasna. So I'm getting kind of a free second guess because Elliot said that. And it's not right. I think, thinking through this again, I'm going to go with my only other guess. Maybe that this is Taravangian.
I feel like you guessed Taravangian quite a bit, Paul.
I did last time.
But this one pays off. It is, yes. Taravangian. Yeah. Well done. Who's he talking to?
That's a good question. I know that... So the reason I'm guessing that is... I know this is like the period of time where Dalinar and Taravangian are kind of getting along. Like they're kind of rigid. Oh, maybe I'm not off. That this is whenever they're like, you know, I hope to prove you wrong and we'll embrace on that day of the Contest of Champions. Or they're trying to figure out what the heck to do with the problem there. Is he talking to Zeth? Probably. Yeah.
Yes,
that's the time frame I'm thinking of.
So Elliot is right. This is late Rhythm of War. This is like two scenes before Zeth kills him.
Yes, and before Taravangian becomes Todium himself. Yeah,
correct. And yeah. Taravangian's like throwing everything at the wall to try to maintain his life of like, you should give Nightblood to Dalinar and let him go to Odium's vision and kill Odium. Like he's kind of just like trying whatever just to stay alive at this point. That is 2-0 for Paul. Going into... Oh, yeah. Going into this third question. Paul, you're going to lead this. This is your review. What did they rate it? And what book is this? It's just so long. Sanderson doesn't go wrong, even when he makes characters into superheroes. And he plots zigzags enough to be surprising. But it's just so long.
That's the beauty of it.
This is a tough one because I could see this review. I could see this review being just about any number except maybe one. Okay, it's just so long. Plot the zigzags. But it's really good. That's my synopsis of the review. Taking this seriously since I have a lead. Gotta hold on to it. Trevor, can you read it one more time?
It's just so long. Sanderson doesn't go wrong, even when he makes characters into superheroes, and he plots zigzags enough to be surprising. But it's just so long.
I think this is a 4 out of 5. I could see this being just about any book. I think, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this is 4 out of 5 for The Way of Kings.
Elliot?
I think this is a 3 out of 5 for Oathbringer.
All right, we're making it a little interesting. This is a 2 out of 5 for Oathbringer.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Okay.
So that is 1 point to Elliot. 2-1 in Paul's favor. Elliot, you get the trivia.
Side note, the reason I guessed the Way of Kings was I thought maybe this person had read other Brandon Sanderson stuff and they were coming to the Way of Kings and like, great, Brandon Sanderson does a good job. It's mm-hmm. just so long, you know.
That's fair.
In comparison. Yeah. Anyways. Yes. Moving on.
All right, Elliot, to defend the point, what shape are Rashadium pupils?
Do they have a unique shape? Well, okay. How many shapes are out there in the world?
Well, if you get into all the gons, I think an infinite number, actually.
There. Yeah, that's going to be an absolute guess. I have no clue at all. What would be a unique, cool shape for a pupil on a horse? Star shape.
Incorrect. Paul, you have the point for the week, but do you want to take a stab at it?
Yes, I have one guess. I have no idea. Full transparency, I do not. This is not going off of any knowledge. I remember a quote or anything like that. But I have a fun guess. I was trying to remember the name. So I'm going off of this, of the whole like 9, 10. Like 10 is an important number and stuff like that. So I think it's whatever, not like an octagon, but whatever the gon is for like...
A decagon?
A decagon. Yeah, I'm going to go with the decagon.
Incorrect.
Okay.
The correct answer...
Don't say circle. Don't say circle.
I wish it was circle. That would be so funny.
Just a normal... They have normal pupils.
Yeah. It's never specified. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
That's what I was afraid of.
The correct answer is rectangle. They have rectangular pupils. And this is some offhand... inner comment from Adolin when he's hanging out with whatever Dalinar's Rashadium, what's his name?
Gallant,
thank you. At the beginning of Oathbringer, because Sureblood has just died. Adolin's all depressed, goes and hangs out with Gallant. And he's like, oh, those rectangular pupils are cool. Moving on. What?
I'm more thrown off by the fact that you even knew to look that up as a trivia question.
I just came across it in my reread. I heard it and I was like, I'm writing that down. That is so random.
Well done.
It's pretty great.
It's like chapter 6 of Oathbringer. Oh, man. All right. So that concludes this week, 11-7. Paul, you pulled a point back. We will reconvene next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
Blackwatch double stomp.
Insert farewell here.
That's Elliot, isn't that the one where he makes it up, but it's the same thing as Spoiled Tomato?
Yes, it is.